Rethinking Photography.
Fotografie neu denken, der Podcast.
Ja, moin, und hier kommt eine weitere Episode anlässlich der Biennale for Visual and Sonic Media, die seit Mitte Mai in Düsseldorf läuft. Mein Name ist Andy Scholz. Ja, und hier auch nochmal zwei Hinweise in eigener Sache. Erstens, das Online-Formular zum Wettbewerb vom Deutschen Fotobuchpreis ist seit dem 30. Juni offline. Und zweitens, auch der Deutsche Fotobuchpreis wird in Düsseldorf bei der Biennale dabei sein. Das darf ich hier bereits ankündigen. Vom 3.7. bis zum 14.7. sind in der Kapuzinergasse 24 mitten in der Düsseldorfer Altstadt im sogenannten Foto Plus Lab die preisgekrönten Bücher zu sehen. Und am 3.7. abends um 18 Uhr sprechen wir sogar etwas ausführlicher darüber in unserem sogenannten Fotobuch-Talk vor Ort in der Kapuzinergasse direkt neben dem Fotobuchregal. Und zwar über das Phänomen Fotobuch. Und wir werden über die Sichtbarkeit von Fotobüchern sprechen und wie wir die erreichen können. Also schon mal vormerken, Mittwoch, 3.7., 18 Uhr, Kapuzinergasse 24, Düsseldorf Altstadt, Foto Plus Lab. Ja, und jetzt, wie versprochen, möchte ich ausführlicher auf das Symposium On Reality eingehen, das von Pola Sieverding und Ashya Yagmurian organisiert wurde und das am 18. und 19. Mai im K21 in Düsseldorf stattgefunden hat. Alle Vorträge wurden mitgeschnitten und ich darf sie in den kommenden Folgen in Auszügen hier präsentieren. Vielen Dank an Pola für die Bereitstellung der Tonmitschnitte und danke an alle Beteiligten. Ja, am 18. Mai 2024 von 11 bis 17 Uhr waren folgende Vorträge zu hören. Und zwar von Gabriel Moser, Sim Chi Chin, Federico Campagna, Hannah Darabi und Stan Douglas. Gehen wir mal der Reihenfolge nach vor. Erst schauen wir, was im Katalog zu den einzelnen Beiträgen steht und dann hören wir einen kurzen Mitschnitt. Den ersten Vortrag hat Gabriel Moser gehalten unter dem Titel A Disobedient Gaze, Artists in the Colonial Photographic Archive. Im Begleittext zum Symposium im Katalog steht, dass Gabriele Moser sich die Frage stellt, was geschieht, wenn KünstlerInnen im fotografischen Archiv nach Realitäten suchen, die der koloniale Common Sense verdunkelt hat. Dieser Vortrag betrachtet das Archiv als Dunkelkammer, in der KünstlerInnen als Entwicklungsagenten agieren und zeigt auf, was wir von zeitgenössischen KünstlerInnen, darunter Onyeka Igwe, Jacqueline Wang Nguyen, Christella Bell Stewart und Sim Chi Chin lernen können. Ich hoffe, ich habe die Namen richtig ausgesprochen. Die gewissermaßen politisch ungehorsam auf Fotografien blicken, die zu Stützung der imperialen Macht entwickelt wurden und alternative Geschichten sichtbar machen, die unser Verständnis der Gegenwart zu stören drohen. Ja, zunächst hören wir eine kurze Einführung von Pola Sieverding und dann Ausschnitte aus dem Vortrag von Gabriel Moser.
It is my pleasure to introduce Gabriel Moser, who is an art historian, writer and independent curator, who holds the position of associate professor at York University Toronto. She's the author of Projecting Citizenship, Photography and Belonging in the British Empire, published by the University of Pennsylvania Press in 2019, and is currently working on her book, Citizen Subject, Photography and Sovereignty in Postwar Canada. Her work examines the intersection of artistic practice and subjectivity with a particular emphasis on photography, surveillance, and social media. Moser is a regular contributor to Art Forum, and her writings appear in journals such as Visual Culture, Photography and Culture, and Third Culture.
Thank you, Pola. Thank you, Asya. Can everyone hear me? We're okay? Terrific. It's lovely to see you all here. So my talk today asks, what happens when artists look in the photographic archive for realities that colonial common sense has obscured? During a research residency, at the Museum of Ethnography in Stockholm. The artist Jacqueline Huang Nguyen was interested in looking at the interplay between vernacular photographs and official colonial imagery, but she became distracted by something else. The repeated appearance of wooden crates in photographs produced by ethnographers and anthropologists who had established the museum's original collections. In folder after folder, the crate appeared as a persistent but seemingly invisible sign of the colonial infrastructures that made the museum's work possible. Sometimes the crates appeared in images of storage rooms or in the background of shots of European ethnographers at work at their desks. But most often, the crate appeared in expedition photographs and was pictured in the hands or on the backs of indigenous laborers who physically transported their cultural objects to the boat and train networks that would bring them to Europe. This racialized distribution of labor did not go unnoticed by contemporary scientists. In a public lecture given in 1888, for instance, the German ethnographer Wilhelm Junker described his decades of research to Central Africa and estimated that more than 20,000 people have carried his burdens. This work was, of course, overwhelmingly unpaid and sometimes involuntary. Perhaps it's for this reason that crates and the workers who carried them do not appear as subject headings in the museum's holdings, and they seem to disappear from view despite being everywhere. Nguyen writes, "Museums of world culture have seldom questioned the logistics for transporting artifacts to their collections." Reversing the ethnographic gaze, as she describes it, Nguyen's installation, Black Atlas, visualizes and rematerializes this network of indigenous labor. Cropping and reproducing archival photographs, sometimes at life size, and mounting them onto wooden plinths to draw an inordinate amount of attention to their presence. In this way, Nguyen's project and a related publication called Creating the World attends to the obvious but sometimes accidental details that photographs show us, but which colonial common sense directs us not to see. The labor that brought the world to Europe, as Nguyen writes, and the role that wooden crates played in facilitating this massive relocation of cultural objects. These overlooked details, which stare us in the face from the surface of the photograph, attest to the difference between what human perception determines as worthy of archiving and the camera's undifferentiated attention on a scene. The contingency of the photograph has, of course, been subject to much theorizing about the medium. From Walter Benjamin's optical unconscious and Roland Barthes' punctum to John Berger's ways of seeing. But in the context of the colonial archive, the instability of photographic meaning opens up the possibility for resistant readings, both by historical and contemporary viewers. If we consider the archive not as a space of settled, concretized knowledge, but as cultural anthropologist Anne Laura Stoller has suggested, a space of partiality and anxious labor, how might photography's radically unfinished nature open up a role for contemporary artists to develop these latent or repressed meanings? Thinking of the archive as a dark room in which artists operate as developing agents, this talk considers what can be learned from artists like Nguyen, who look disobediently at photographs that were designed to hold up imperial power and bring into view instead alternate histories that might disrupt our understanding of the present. Shifting attention away from the archive as a site where glossy state-sanctioned photographs of official realities are stored, I want to treat the archive as a space of photographic production, one where inverted, grainy impressions can be manipulated to reveal the tenuous grounds of how histories are formed. And I draw here, as I almost always do, on the work of philosopher, artist, and anti-colonial theorist Ariella Aisha Azoulay and her emphasis on the relational encounter between the photographer, subject, and viewer that is produced by the camera. As she writes, the encounter initiated by the camera is one in which no actor has complete sovereignty. Following Azulay, I read the works of Onyeka Igwe, Jacqueline Huang Nguyen, Christabel Stewart, and Sim Chi Yin as examples of what I've been thinking of as darkroom sovereignty. Darkroom sovereignty is, to my mind, distinct from remediation, the translation of an image from one medium to another, with the goals of preservation or increased accessibility. Instead, for these artists, developing colonial images involves procedures of obstruction and reversal that disrupt any easy legibility.
Ja, das war ein kleiner Ausschnitt und gewissermaßen die Einführung in den Vortrag von Gabrielle Moser. An dieser Stelle kann ich euch nur einen Ausschnitt präsentieren, denn der Vortrag war reich bebildert. Wir müssen uns also mit diesem kurzen Teaser hier begnügen, denn es ist absolut notwendig und viel interessanter, wenn ihr die Bilder dazu seht, die Gabrielle Moser gezeigt hat. Alle Vorträge, das kann ich hier schon einmal ankündigen, sind demnächst auf der Webseite von Düsseldorf Foto Plus zu sehen und abrufbar. Ja, anschließend kam die Künstlerin Sim Chi Yin zu Wort und hielt einen Performance-Vortrag unter dem in die Zukunft gerichteten Titel One Day We'll Understand. Der Performance-Vortrag basiert auf dem jahrzehntelangen Projekt der Künstlerin, die in ihrer Arbeit ihre Familiengeschichte und die des antikolonialen Krieges in British Malaya erforscht. Sie nimmt uns mit auf eine intime Reise, auf der sie das koloniale Archiv befragt, Wege aus der traumatischen Vergangenheit erkundet und über generationenübergreifende Erinnerungen und Erbschaften nachdenkt. Auch hier könnt ihr euch vorstellen, dass das ohne den Vortrag selber live zu sehen schwierig funktioniert, aber ich versuche einfach mal hier einen kleinen Ausschnitt als Teaser zu präsentieren. Hören wir da mal rein. Ja, ein kleiner Hinweis noch, zunächst hören wir, wie Asia Yagmurian die Künstlerin kurz vorstellt.
I would like to introduce our next speaker, Sim Chi Yin. Sim Chi Yin is an artist whose research-based practice uses archival interventions to contest and complicate historiographies and colonial narratives. She works across photography, film, installation, performance, and bookmaking. She is currently completing a PhD at King's College London and has exhibited at this year's Venice Biennial, as well as museums and galleries around the world. Her work is held in numerous collections, including Harvard University Museum, M+ Hong Kong, and the National Museum of Singapore. Her theater performance, One Day We'll Understand, will premiere in Singapore in August 2024. The performance is part of Sim's decade-long project consisting of photographs, moving image, installations, and lecture performances on the Malayan Emergency, an anti-colonial war fought by the Malayan Communist Party against the British. Welcome, Sim Chi Yin. Four years ago, I gave birth to a little boy. A day before the peak of COVID-19 deaths in London. A time when they were issuing no birth, but just death certificates. It was traumatic for all of us, but perhaps nothing like what you had experienced in your time. I gave him a part of your name, the Yi that you had used in your pen name when you wrote those anti-colonial editorials and speeches. Resolute, firm, tenacious, determined. Yi Wei. I wonder what else he inherits from our pasts. What he carried with him into the world. What he will take into the future. What of my excavating the stories of you and your compatriots? The stories of struggle, destruction, sacrifice, idealism, conviction.
did he get in utero? What of my digging in the colonial archive in those final months of the pregnancy was he exposed to? What transpired through my skin into his? Does history write itself in a line or in circles? There was never a photograph of you in our home or in any of your children's houses. For years, I wondered why they never spoke about you. Why does Grandma's gravestone not bear your name? The war that was never declared, Malaya. The Malayan emergency was a war on all ways but name. Depending on who you ask, it was an anti-colonial resistance war or a very successful crushing of a local communist insurgency. The armed wing of the Malayan Communist Party, which led the fighting, called it the anti-British war. The British called it the Malayan emergency so they could keep insurance policies covering the rubber and tin supplies from their prized colony. This also meant the conflict never came under international rules of war. Local leftist guerrilla fighters took on the colonial forces in Malaya's towns, plantations, and jungles. The main fighting was between 1948 and 1960, but the communists kept up a low-grade jungle war till 1989. This conflict has an outsized importance in the history of warfare. In the 6 decades since, it has been held up in military manuals as an exemplary counterinsurgency campaign that went on to shape other wars in Vietnam, Iraq, and Afghanistan. British military and police officers who had suppressed uprisings in Palestine were redeployed to Malaya in 1948. Their brutal strategies set up precedents for America's war in Vietnam. For example, the spraying of the chemical Agent Orange to destroy crops was piloted by the British in Malaya, part of their campaign to deny food to the insurgents, and tactics of resettling the rural population to starve the communists of food, men, and medicine was also first trialed in Malaya. They forcibly relocated almost 500,000 people into encampments ringed with barbed wire, euphemistically called new villages. The communist atrocities remain well documented, but neither the mass deportation of 30,000 Malayans to China, the Batangkali massacre, nor the beheading and dismembering of communist guerrilla fighters, and their being photographed post-mortem, has ever been brought to account. How then do we re-remember and re-articulate this war? Restitute the missing pieces in the official and necessarily colonial archive? Can one cast a disobedient gaze over that which is in the colonial archive? Or at least shine a light that reveals its indexicality? A light that also transforms the colonial prints into new scenes, new access points, new imaginaries? Can we unsee the colonial gaze? Can we remake the materiality of the archive itself? Can we revert them to the glass negatives and daguerreotypes of old and subvert the apparatus that accompanied the imperial enterprise? Can we use the master's tools to try to dismantle the master's house? Do we want to? Whose bodies do we see? Whose bodies are foregrounded? Which bodies are rarely sighted?
What words are inscribed on the yellow and brown bodies in the archive? Do they elevate, subjugate, or re-perpetuate violences? Whose bodies are missing, captured or uncaptured by the imperial shutter, or photographed post-mortem and then destroyed or hidden, only to re-emerge on eBay? How do I use this without replicating its violence? What knowledge are you contributing to history, they ask? A different sort, perhaps. Telling stories of infamous characters and sites long written out of history. Seeking perhaps the only kind of reparations possible now. What happens in conflicts where the camera was rarely in the hands of the losers?
Ja, was passiert, wenn die Verlierer die Kameras in der Hand haben und damit Fotos machen? Ja, auch an dieser Stelle kann ich euch nur einen Ausschnitt präsentieren, denn der Vortrag war auch reich bebildert. Der ist ja auch als Performance-Vortrag angekündigt gewesen. Und wir müssen uns hier mit diesem kurzen, aber sehr intensiven Teaser begnügen. Denn es ist absolut notwendig und viel interessanter, wenn ihr die Bilder dazu seht. Alle Vorträge, das kann ich hier auch noch einmal wiederholen, sind demnächst auf der Webseite von Düsseldorf Foto Plus zu sehen und abrufbar. Ja, der dritte Vortrag am 18. Mai war von dem italienischen Philosophen Federico Campagna und trägt den Titel World Building Imagination. Im Begleittext zu dem Vortrag heißt es, ich zitiere: Federico Campagna wird die metaphysischen Aspekte eines Prozesses erörtern, der den Bildern zugrunde liegt, nämlich die Imagination. Die Praxis der Imagination führt uns über die Illusion hinaus, die Welt objektiv betrachten zu können, hin zu einer bewussten Annäherung an unsere Umgebung als eine Fiktion, die immer im Prozess des Aufbaus, der Demontage und des Wiederaufbaus ist. Wenn wir uns das metaphysische Potenzial der Vorstellungskraft zu eigen machen, kann dies den Weg zu einer neuen emanzipatorischen Praxis der Welterschaffung eröffnen. Ja, ich bekomme da immer so ein bisschen Gänsehaut, muss ich ja sagen. Nicht nur, weil ich selber Philosophie studiert habe, sondern weil ich das Thema tatsächlich auch im Zusammenhang mit Fotografie sehr, sehr spannend finde. Ja, hören wir mal rein, was Pola Sieverding quasi als Einführung gesagt hat über Federico Campagna, und dann hören wir einen kurzen Ausschnitt aus diesem Vortrag. Wie gesagt, den ganzen Vortrag können wir hier nicht abspielen, aber er wird demnächst auf der Webseite von der Biennale for Visual and Sonic Media Düsseldorf Foto Plus zu sehen und zu hören sein. Hören wir mal rein in den kurzen Ausschnitt.
Our next speaker will appear on this screen because he couldn't be here in person. Let me introduce you to Federico Campagna. Federico Campagna is a philosopher and writer exploring the themes of magic, techne, prophecy, labor, and reality. He holds an MA in cultural studies from Goldsmiths University, London, and a PhD from Royal College of Art, also in London. He is a lecturer in intellectual history at École Cantonale d'Art de Lausanne, associate fellow at the Warburg Institute, and critical fellow at the Royal Academy Schools in London. He's co-founder and senior editor at the publishing house Timeo, and his latest book is entitled Prophetic Cultures, Recreation for Adults, published by Bloomsbury Press in 2021.
Hello, my name is Federico Campagna. It's a pleasure to be here today, well, virtually with you. I would like to thank Paula and Asia for having invited me to take part to this symposium. The symposium revolves around the idea of image And images are not immediately related to what I usually do. I am a lecturer in philosophy and a philosopher. But images are quite close to one particular branch of philosophy, which happens to be the one that I usually take in my work, namely metaphysics. Today, I would like to talk about the link between images and metaphysics. And this link is the imagination. Let me begin by clarifying what is metaphysics. It is a branch of philosophy, and perhaps is the oldest, although the proper name, metaphysics, first appears with Aristotle, so quite later on. But the object of inquiry of metaphysics has been at the heart of philosophical and theological speculation since the beginning of human culture, really. Metaphysics is that line of inquiry into our world, into our experience of the world, which tries to identify the most fundamental aspects of reality, beneath and beyond what's immediately apparent to us. The fundamental aspects of reality beneath and beyond what is immediately apparent to us, well, I imagine here comes the question, what's wrong with reality as it appears to us? Isn't it always already everything here? Why should there be anything beneath or beyond it? But the fact is that the moment we start looking more closely at the way in which we perceive reality and we understand it, the concepts that we use, for example, we notice that they are riddled with problems and paradoxes. Let's take some of the most fundamental concepts that we use to experience reality. Time. Time baffles us as soon as we consider it in terms, for example, of its minimum element, the instant. This present moment, this instant of the present, is a time span without duration. The instant has no duration. How is it possible that instants without duration, put one next to the other, create the experience of the duration of time? Similarly with space. When we understand space, we think of the basic building block of space, the point, as an item without volume or dimension. How can a series of points without volume in themselves create objects endowed with volume? Time and space then become even more complex and paradoxical when we start thinking about them in terms of their infinite extension. The notion of infinity escapes us unless we limit ourselves to talking about it negatively, infinity, non-finite, but in itself. So there's something that doesn't quite work in the familiar everyday notion of linear time and linear flat navigable space. But the problems are more complex than that in the normal experience we have of reality. Let us consider, for example, the existence of an object. And there we are confronted with a conceptual abyss. What do we mean when we say that something exists? What do we mean when we say that this lighter exists? Surely we can say many things about how things exist, where it's located, in what moment in time, in what form, within what network of relations they exist, and so on. But how can we define the very fact of its existence, the that of its existence? Likewise for the world. How can we define not how the world is, but that the world is?
Ja, damit kommen wir zum vorletzten Vortrag am 18. Mai mit dem Titel From Angle Lab Street to Persian Square. Und der Vortrag, der auch als Performance-Vortrag angekündigt war, kam von der iranischen Künstlerin Hanna Darabi. Im Begleittext heißt es, die Darstellung von Archivmaterial oder kulturellen Objekten spielt in Darabis Projekten eine wesentliche Rolle. Sie werden in einer Konstellation aktiviert, in der Verbindungen zu anderen Materialien wie Text oder Musik sowie zu ihren fotografischen Serien hergestellt werden, indem sie diese Objekte, die in einer bestimmten Zeit und an einem bestimmten Ort entstanden sind, sammelt und in ein Netz kultureller Bedeutung einordnet. Damit stellt Darabi Fragen zur iranischen Gesellschaft. Der Beitrag von Hannah Darabi wird die Rolle der Dokumentarfotografie und der Bilder als Dokumente in ihrer eigenen Praxis erörtern. Auch das ging natürlich, wie ihr euch vorstellen könnt, nicht ohne Bilder zu sehen. Darum werde ich auch hier wieder nur einen kleinen Teaser präsentieren. Hören wir da mal rein. Asia Yaghmourian hören wir vorweg mit der kurzen Begrüßung und Vorstellung der Künstlerin.
Our next speaker is Hannah Darabi, who is an artist and photographer. Her work unfolds as a mediation of the unique political, economic and cultural conditions of her home country of Iran. Darabi has developed a set of photographic techniques and vocabularies interacting with text, archival images and objects to articulate a unique form of cultural memory and archival practice. Artist books are a primary medium with which Darabi articulates her photographic vocabulary and practice. Engigab Street, A Revolution Through Books, Iran 1979-1983, was published by Spectre Books in 2019, and her works are held in the collections of the Museum of Modern Art, Library and Archives in New York, the Kandinsky Library at the Centre Pompidou in Paris, the Bibliothèque Nationale de France, and the Royal Library of Belgium. Hannah Darabi's work is currently on view in the exhibition here at K21, forthcoming Speculations in Urban Space, curated by Doris Christoph.
Hello, and thank you for being here. And thank you very much for including me to this amazing symposium and to K21 to host the event here. For this symposium, I chose to concentrate on a very specific aspect of three fairly recent projects where the cultural objects or archival materials as documents are put in conversation with documentary photography. Through this practice, I would like to challenge the status of what is considered a document in the photographic or archival form. The representation of the urban landscape builds a metonymic structure around where other elements related to the subject, such as visual or literary documents, text or music, are put in dialogue. These urban landscapes, photographs, also give a face to invisible places. The project Au Bas Fragile, High Low Fragile, made between 2013 and 2016, is a questioning of the possibility of representing the city of Tehran, a city that has long resisted the photographic image. These photographs are not documents that illustrate the failure of urban modernity, nor are they visual conventions for picturesque or exotic imagery, but rather refer to an aesthetic of the ordinary and the common. The conception of urban space as a metonymic structure, an idea presented by Irit Rogoff in her book Terra Infirma, and applied to the notion of geography, attempts to construct a more precise framework of thinking for these urban landscapes photographs than that proposed by the term documentary photography form. The urban space, or more precisely, the urban landscape as a metonymic structure, is what mediates between the concrete, the real, the psychic data, as well as the metaphorical articulations of relationships with other types of materials. This idea allows me to position these photographs outside of the expectations related to the documentary image, which is supposed to carry a thread. And in this particular case, that of Iranian society. It also allows me to open a space that will welcome multiple forms of narratives around the same issue. In the project Au Bas Fragile, the series of images around the city of Tehran is ultimately not made according to a scientific or urbanistic protocol. in order to give an objective face to this modern city. Nor does it attempt to create a particular cartography by relying on the metaphorical aspect of the image. Here, the representation of Tehran through images of the ordinary city offers a space that is both close and similar to that of the real city and different. As at the same time, they are bearer of signs that refer us to the condition of the shooting and to other subjective criteria, both cultural and personal. In this case, the urban space is not only studied from the point of view of its relation to a territory, but also with its history. The term ordinary as a specific quality of these representations designates a form in which no element takes on greater importance than the others in the construction of the image. This is achieved both by maintaining a constant distance from the object's photograph and by avoiding the use of connotative or anecdotal elements in the frame. It is this banality of the landscape, insofar as it is perceived as such by the receiver, that becomes a vector of multi-subjectivity. So in this presentation, I confront three images of the project with three representations of objects to highlight new significations which become possible through this exercise.
Ja, auch hier fehlt natürlich ein ganzes Stück Vortrag, aber das ist wie gesagt schwierig, wenn ihr und wenn wir die Bilder dazu nicht sehen können. Aber wie gesagt, die Bilder und der Vortrag sind demnächst auf düsseldorffotoplus.de zu sehen. Damit kommen wir zum letzten Vortrag, der dann schließlich von Stan Douglas kam und als sogenannter Artist Talk angekündigt war unter dem Titel The Black Mirror or How I Learned to Stop Worrying and Love Photography. Im Begleittext steht, anhand von Beispielen aus seinem eigenen Werk wird Stan Douglas den Wert des unintelligenten Automatismus der Fotografie untersuchen. Sobald die Vorstellung von fotografischer Objektivität aufgegeben und die fremde, unmenschliche Natur des Mediums erkannt wird, kann es zu einem mächtigen Vehikel für menschliches Handeln werden. Sehr, sehr spannender Teaser auch und eine sehr, sehr spannende Ankündigung. Aber wie gesagt, ich kann hier leider nicht den ganzen Vortrag vorspielen, denn das würde keinen Sinn machen, ohne die Bilder zu zeigen. Darum erlaubt mir hier nur einen kleinen Teaser zu präsentieren und dann habt ihr hoffentlich Lust, euch die Videos bei düsseldorffotoplus.de demnächst anzuschauen. Ja, hören wir zunächst eine kurze Einführung von Pola Sieverding zu Stan Douglas.
I would like to invite Stan Douglas. Stan Douglas is an artist working across film, photography, theater productions and other multidisciplinary projects. His work investigates the parameters of the visual media he employs. His ongoing inquiry into technology's role in image making and how those mediations infiltrate and shape collective memory has resulted in works at once specific in their historical and cultural references and broadly accessible. His work is held in major collections and has been exhibited in museums around the world. Douglas represented Canada at the Venice Biennale 2022 and exhibited a Documenta at several occasions. Stan, it's all yours.
Thanks, Paula. Is there an image up yet? Okay. I made this picture 23 years ago, and I got to touch on photographic projects ever since then that I've done in a way where I deconstruct and reconstruct the medium photography and their subjects in various locations. This is called Every Building on 100 West Hastings, obviously alluding to that famous accordion book by Ed Ruscha, Every Building on the Sunset Strip from 1966. That kind of documented, often run-down neighborhood in Los Angeles, as is this, which was a neighborhood that was kind of left to go foul by developers. They sort of let things go, let things sort of fall apart until there's a possibility of exploiting it for other means. So many of these buildings are vacant, many of them are empty, but they had different uses. Of course, when things happen like that, things can become useful to artists. The building in white that you see passing right by now, on the top floor had the SFU's art studios for appeared in the 80s. Jeff Wall made his famous Picture for Women there. On the ground floor was the Art Gallery, of which I was a board member, until the neighborhood got so rough that they had to shut down and move away. This big building behind the tree in three lots was a huge Chinese restaurant called The Crown with a mezzanine, open mezzanine and two escalators. First place they had a dim sum, because this is all in the edge of Chinatown, so there's no space of that scale in Chinatown proper, but it worked here. But of course now it's kind of, again, as I say, gone fallow. As we go along, we see more boarded storefronts, more empty sort of apartment buildings above, a few SROs, but really this is not really being used to its full potential. We're coming to a new, the Blue Building, which at that point was an artist studio, an artist collective. But again, this is all a different condition of the economy. What I did is I had a 4x5 camera and walked with a light, a single light to fill in shadows, and then moved facade by facade as police stopped traffic to document these different buildings. And this was like, you know, 2001, so technology wasn't such as now. So when I was stitching together these 4x5 scans, I decided, do I want to press save now and wait half an hour, or keep working and hope this doesn't crash, because my G5 computer just couldn't handle such a gigantic image.
Mackie 5, meine Güte, das ist jetzt echt 23 Jahre her und das ist eine ziemliche Weile. Aber ja, auch heute komme ich zumindest immer wieder an die Grenze, wenn die Dateien mittlerweile mal eben 2 oder 2,5 Gigabyte groß sind. Auch hier müssen wir uns mit diesem kurzen Teaser begnügen, denn es ist absolut notwendig, wie ihr euch vorstellen könnt, und viel interessanter, wenn ihr die Bilder dazu seht, die Stan Douglas zeigt. Aber ihr habt hier einen Eindruck bekommen, wie ich hoffe, von den Vorträgen und dem Symposium, das Pola Sieverding und Asia Yagmurian konzipiert und moderiert haben im Rahmen der Biennale for Visual and Sonic Media Düsseldorf Photo Plus. Das war auf jeden Fall ein interessantes Line-up, wie ich finde. Und der zweite Teil kommt auch hier demnächst, also der zweite Tag, weil es war ja ein Samstag und ein Sonntag, also der 18. und der 19. Mai. Und der 19. Mai kommt natürlich auch hier demnächst. Und wie angekündigt, werde ich dem Vortrag von Federico Campagna eine eigene Episode widmen. Die ausführlichen Videos zu den Vorträgen werden demnächst auf der Webseite von Düsseldorf Photo Plus zu sehen sein. Wann ist noch nicht ganz klar, aber ich empfehle, wer sich dafür interessiert, der möge doch einfach regelmäßig auf der Webseite von Düsseldorf Photo Plus, also düsseldorffotoplus.de vorbeischauen oder sich in den Newsletter eintragen oder bei Instagram der Biennale folgen oder natürlich auch hier immer wieder reinhören in meinen Podcast. Denn die Informationen werde ich natürlich auch hier immer wieder aktualisieren und euch mitgeben, mit auf den Weg. Auch hier nochmal kurz der Hinweis und ich bitte noch einmal um euer Verständnis. Es ist natürlich nicht möglich, die gesamten Vorträge und ihre detaillierten Inhalte hier im Podcast wiederzugeben, ohne die Bilder, ohne die Vortragsfolien und so weiter dazu zu sehen. Darum habe ich hier nur ein paar Ausschnitte präsentiert. Mehr Infos zu Biennale for Visual and Sonic Media unter düsseldorffotoplus.de. Und selbstverständlich sind all die Informationen wie gewohnt in den sogenannten Shownotes zum Anklicken aufbereitet. Ja, danke fürs Reinhören und dabei sein. Wir sehen uns hoffentlich vielleicht am 3. Juli, am Mittwoch, 3. Juli in der Kapuzinergasse 24 in der Düsseldorfer Altstadt am Fotobuchregal mit einem Fotobuch-Talk. Lasst ein Abo da und empfiehlt meinen Podcast weiter. Die nächste Episode kommt bestimmt. Ciao, ciao und bis zum nächsten Mal. Gesund bleiben da draußen.
Rethinking Photography.
Fotografie neu denken. Der Podcast.